The following podcast is a Divine Therapy production.
Hello, my loves. Welcome back to All Things Divine. I want to share a personal story today, and I'm doing so in hopes that I can provide deeper understanding for anyone who may be going through this same situation. So one day I had 69 cents to my name. And I want to say that plainly because there was nothing dramatic about the moment when I noticed. I didn't have any panic and I actually didn't spiral. It was just a very clear awareness that something in my life had finally come into view and I could no longer look away from it. So I asked someone for $15, not as a rescue and not as a favor that was soaked in some type of guilt, but truly as a bridge, like just something small to carry me across a narrow gap while I handled the rest. And I was clear that I would return it in a few days because that's honestly never been a problem with me. I have always been the kind of person who means what she says, and I honor my word. That's very important to me, especially when dealing with really anyone that I come across, but specifically someone very close to me. So having the 69 cents in my account and then having the humility to ask for $15, I was actually told I don't have it at the moment from this person. And I am very much aware that things happen in life and sometimes, you know, you have things that kind of pile up on top of each other. And so, you know, you may not have it at the moment. And I accepted that answer because I am practiced at understanding, at making room for other people's limitations, at assuming good intent, even when it costs me something. But within the hour, and I'm being generous when I say hour, it could have been like 30 minutes. I actually saw that the person that I asked for $15, they had that money there all along. They had more than enough. And not only was it there, but they sent it elsewhere. So what ended up happening is I was told no for the $15, but someone asked them for $80 and they gave it to them, no questions asked. While I was sitting with nothing and no room left to maneuver. Y'all, this is a true story of something that happened at a point in my life. And that is where the moment for me, it just cracked open. Not because of the amount and not because I was denied, but because I realized I had reached the edge of something I had been carrying alone for a very long time. And the person I had shown up for over and over again either did not see that I was unraveling or they saw it and chose not to respond. So let me give you some backstory here. I was raised on the idea that you give generously, that you show up, you offer what you have, and that goodness multiplies. And I still believe that deeply, but I was also raised believing that care would be reflected back, that love would have this memory and it would remember all of the loving things that was done previously, and that the people you poured into would know how to hold you when your hands were empty. Now, what I'm learning is that generosity does not automatically teach reciprocity. And being the giver does not mean the other person is learning how to give. Sometimes it only teaches them how to receive without awareness, without responsibility, and just without any type of pause. So standing there, well, actually, I was sitting there because I was sitting in my car crying, especially whenever I was told no. I was just at like this really low point. So I was sitting there with 69 cents crying in my car. What landed was not about money at all. It was the recognition that when I finally had nothing left to offer, the system I had been participating in had no way to hold me. And that realization does something to you if you let it. But I chose not to let it. I mean, maybe for like 5 to 10 minutes, I definitely spiraled. So this episode is not about dollars or favors or keeping score. It is about what happens when the giver reaches the end of ourselves and how we confuse love with endurance, how we learn to normalize being overlooked, and how moments like this become invitations to tell the truth about what we have actually outgrown. We are going to talk about the emotional economy of giving, what it costs over time, how faith, loyalty, and responsibility can become tangled, and how to recognize when something you once called love no longer includes you. And we are going to get into the transactional attachment and the true meaning of the number 69. When I say 69, I'm speaking through numerology as a language of pattern and relationship. So for anybody else who is thinking about the other 69, get your heads out of the gutter. That is not what we are talking about right now. So stay with me. Stay with me. We are learning here. So in numerology, numbers do not exist in isolation. They interact. They face each other. They form loops. And that is why 69 matters, because it's not a single number. It is a closed circuit. So let's go a little further. The number 6 represents the role of the holder. In practical terms, the 6 is the one who carries responsibility as identity, not as a task, and who becomes the emotional infrastructure of families, relationships, and systems by learning early that stability depends on their ability to manage, anticipate, and absorb. The number 6 does not wait to be asked. They notice, they intervene, they adjust themselves to what is needed. And over time, that adjustment stops being a choice and it starts being part of their identity. So some of you who are really big in numerology might be wondering, okay, she's right, but something sounds a little off. I'm switching to my language, which is numerological role language. So when I say the 6, I'm extending that into a relational analysis and naming it explicitly. Numerology has always been role-based and cyclical. So divine therapy is naming and applying it to attachment, responsibility, and relational labor in real life. So that is our numerology. So remember when you hear me say the 6, and don't worry, we will definitely expand on what I mean by the 6 or the 1, the 9, and so on. We have a lot of numbers. We'll expand on that in the bloom season. But for right now, the 6 is divine therapy's numerology. So the 6 becomes home for other people, not in a romantic sense, but in a functional one. So they keep things running. They keep the emotional lights on and they track what's missing before anyone names it. So they will fix things quietly. They nurture consistently and they become dependable in ways that slowly remove them from the category of someone who is allowed to need help themselves. And over time, the 6 confuses being relied on with being valued, because that is the role that receives acknowledgement. So now that we have really gotten into the 6 in our numerology and our language in our house, let's talk about the 9. Now, the number 9 does not represent another role. The number 9 represents completion through awareness. So in numerology, 9 holds the accumulated information of everything that came before it. Nothing new is created in nine. What happens in the nine is recognition. So it's the moment when a pattern has repeated enough times that it can no longer be reframed or softened or justified by intention. The nine arrives when something has been fully lived and fully understood. So the wisdom of nine is earned through repetition and loss. And it includes the loss of stories we told ourselves in order to stay in a situation that no longer served us in the present or our higher selves. So the nine does not ask how to repair the system. The nine asks whether the system should continue at all. So I'm going to stop right there, because basically with my 69 cents that I had in my account and just the way that I felt, and like I said, I cried in my car. That is very much a true story. I cried in my car and I was just like devastated. And the number 69 kept just really heightening me. And I may have seen it repeated somewhere, but for me spiritually, I only needed to just have that one interaction to know that there was a deeper meaning behind everything that I had gone through and like just that situation. So the way that my mind works is that my, I will say, I wanted to say fairies. So I know someone's listening, they know what I'm talking about, but with the spiritual tools that I work with, there are certain things that will heighten me. And it's almost like a puzzle piece, you know? And it's really amazing. I love working like that. But in this situation, the six and the nine, they were a huge puzzle piece. So then I start to break it down and I start with numerology. I start with also divine therapies numerology. And so I'm starting to see this pattern that really had this huge epiphany moment for me with just that number, just me having 69 cents. So I've already broken down the six and the nine for you. So I'm telling you what is happening. I'm telling you that at one point in your life, you may be the person who carries it all. You fix everything. You are just the one that someone is just constantly going to, and you keep going and going. And part of your personality, instead of you wanting to be that person and just being able to choose when you want to be the role of the number six, you are now stuck in that. Okay, now follow me, friends. Okay, because we are having a come to Jesus meeting. You are now stuck in the role number six. So now it's in the risky area, because that is now your personality. And now you depend on people needing you. You need that. And then when you give them whatever transaction they need, whether it's just emotional support, financial, really anything, just being there, listening to them, helping them, even if they're trying to start a new business, you're helping them, you're the brains. They are giving you those accolades because you are constantly giving them transaction and you don't know how to get out of it, even though you're kind of tired, but that is your soul identity. Okay, so that is the six. Got it? Are we here? Do we see each other? And so with the nine is saying, hey, this story is done. Are you recognizing what's happening here? This is no longer a healthy interaction. And it is time for you to acknowledge it. You can't adjust it anymore. This is an unhealthy boundaries. And you cannot move forward. This no longer serves you. So that is the six and that is the nine. So this next is where 69 becomes precise. In 69, the six is always oriented. It's towards giving and maintaining and holding it all together, while the nine is oriented towards ending, releasing, and concluding. So that is what it's telling you to do. It's time to let go, friends. So one sustains the loop, the other reveals its cost. One continues out of responsibility, The other interrupts through awareness. And don't you hate whenever you have to like flip the mirror back on yourself? Because I definitely do. I do not like that, but I will do it. It's painful though. So this is not a mutual exchange. This is asymmetry. The six gives until depletion. And that's probably how you're feeling right now. The nine emerges when the cost of that giving becomes impossible to rationalize. There's nothing, you have nowhere to turn. Your back is literally against the wall. You got to face it. You can't rationalize it. You can't make it better. This is what has happened. So together, they describe a relational pattern where care flows in one direction for too long and where responsibility is assumed rather than protected and where endurance is mistaken for love. So 69 in this case is not intimacy, folks. 69 is imbalance made visible. It is the moment when giving without receiving can no longer be reframed as loyalty and faith or even goodness. It's the point where responsibility stops being reciprocal and becomes one directional. And where the person who has been holding everything realizes that they have been holding it alone. That is why this number showed up when I had 69 cents, because the moment was not about, again, the money. It was about the loop revealing itself. And man, it hurt so bad because I could see in real time how long I had been oriented toward holding and how little room there was for me once I stopped. So in numerology, when a number appears at the exact moment a structure collapses, it's not a coincidence. It's a confirmation that a cycle has completed. So 69 marks the point where the one who carries finally sees the system clearly enough to stop participating in it. And that is exactly what I did. What I want to name next is something many people feel, but they don't have the language for. And without language, it gets internalized as confusion, self-blame, or over-explanation, when in reality, it's a very specific relational structure. And in this house, the House of Divine Therapy, we call it transactional attachment. So transactional attachment is not about money and it's not about favors in the obvious sense, even though those things can be involved. It's about love being tied to what you give rather than who you are, and connection being maintained only as long as you are providing something that resolves, stabilizes, or supports another person's life. So in transactional attachment, affection is not rooted in presence or regard. It's rooted in function. So people connect to you because you solve things, because you carry things, you stabilize things, maybe because your presence makes their life easier, lighter, more organized, or less overwhelming. So the bond is formed around what you provide, not around mutual knowing. And because of that, it's fragile in a very specific way. So there are no receipts in transactional attachment. No one says out loud that love is conditional, and no one admits that connection is being maintained through utility, but there is an invisible ledger running underneath the relationship. That's the root. And it quietly tracks who gives, who absorbs, who adjusts, and who benefits. So you give without keeping score because you believe you're building something relational. You believe you're investing in care, loyalty, or shared history. You believe love is something you demonstrate through consistency and effort, but the other person is relating to you through need. And when someone is attached to you transactionally, they don't experience your giving as generosity. They experience it as availability, as access, as something that exists because it always has. This is why The shock comes when reciprocity does not arrive, not because you expected payment, not because I expected it, and not because you were keeping count, but because at some point you assumed that what you had been offering would be met with awareness, with care, and with some form of response when you finally paused. And then you pause and nothing happens. No one notices that you're empty. No one checks in differently. No one adjusts their expectations. The relationship continues to pull from you as if nothing has changed because, from their perspective, nothing has changed. So when people are used to you being the source, they don't notice when you're actually empty. And that's the part that hurts so much, not because you were denied something, but because the absence of response reveals the truth of the bond. It shows you that the connection was organized around what you could provide, not around who you are and when you stop providing it. So transactional attachment disappears the moment your usefulness pauses because the attachment was never to you. And I know that hurts saying that. It's flipping the mirror around. It hurts because you have to admit no matter how much time you have spent with someone, they were never attached to you. It was to the function you served. And this is where many people turn inward and start questioning themselves. They ask whether they asked for too much, whether they miscommunicated, whether they expected something unreasonable, when the reality is simpler and more difficult to accept. You did not lose love. You exited a role. And I want you to remember that. This is why transactional attachment can exist inside families, faith communities, friendships, and long-term relationships without ever being named. It hides behind responsibility. It hides behind loyalty. It hides behind narratives of strength and reliability. And it convinces the giver that exhaustion is normal and that needing support is an inconvenience rather than a human state. So in this house, we don't call that love. That is not love. We call it a structure that benefits from your endurance and collapses the moment you stop holding it together. And naming that is not bitterness and is not resentment. It's clarity about what has actually been happening. And clarity is what allows you to stop negotiating with yourself about why something feels off. We have to be honest with ourselves. And I want to circle back to this again. What makes transactional attachment so difficult to recognize is that most people think it only shows up in obvious situations like a new connection that immediately asks for money, access, or rescue because those examples are visible and easy to label. But in reality, transactional attachment almost never takes root in new relationships. It takes root in long-standing ones inside families, faith communities, friendships, and long-term bonds where history, trust, and shared memory make the structure harder to question. It will take root. In a marriage, you could have that long-term relationship that turns into marriage and you're down the road 10, 15, 20 years and that whole marriage was a transactional attachment. That is where it does the most damage because the length of the relationship becomes proof of love even when the exchange itself has stopped being mutual. So one of the least discussed forms of transactional attachment happens when someone comes to you for comfort, guidance, or support, and the connection feels warm and engaged as long as you are meeting that need. They come to you as the one who can see clearly, who can hold space, who can help them make sense of their life, and you show up because you genuinely believe in their potential and you want them to expand. You see it for them. You believe in them. But when their situation improves, or when they find someone else who can offer the same support, something changes. The engagement drops, the closeness fades, the bond loosens without explanation because the attachment was tied to what you provided, not to the relationship itself. This is the part that unsettles people deeply. You remember years of connection, shared moments, laughter, and mutual understanding, while the other person suddenly creates distance and they will rewrite a story on you and they will disconnect entirely. In some cases, they will even recast you as the problem because acknowledging the truth would require them to face how much they were relating to you through need rather than care. And when that happens, it can feel like you're living inside an illusion because the relationship felt real to you. And in many ways it was, but it was real in function, not reciprocity. And in this house, again, we call that part transactional collapse, which is the point where a bond organized around what you provide can no longer sustain itself once the role changes. And what you're left grieving is not just the loss of a person, but the realization that the connection depended on your usefulness rather than your presence. And that is very hurtful. Okay, so I know that I said a lot. And I don't want you to think that I'm going to tell you all of that without telling you how to recognize functional relating in real time. I have your back, friends. We are going to get through this. And here is a distinction most people miss. And once you hear it, it changes how you listen to your own relationships. So, relational connection is curious about you when nothing is wrong. Functional connection activates around need, and that's where you might get tangled up in transactional attachment. To me, they're pretty much the same thing. But again, if you have a functional connection with someone that's always reaching out to you only when they need something, there might be some unhealthy transactional attachment there that you need to release. So in real time, functional relating shows up in when you are contacted and why. You are reached for during moments of confusion, distress, decision-making, or emotional mess, but you are less present in moments of stability, ease, and neutrality. You are part of their process, not part of their life. Another way to notice it is this. Ask yourself whether your presence is welcomed or whether your capacity is being accessed. So one of the clearest real-time indicators is how the relationship responds to neutral boundaries. Not dramatic boundaries, not ultimatums, just simple human limits. Like needing rest, not having the answer, saying you will have to get back to them later. When a relationship is relational, these moments are absorbed without rupture. When it is functional, these moments register as withdrawal and the connection quietly starts to thin. Now, I know I'm clocking my hands right now. Well, my fingers. I'm clocking this for you. And I know someone else is sitting there right now listening to this and they're like, I knew it. See, I have y'all's back, friends. Now, let's move on. Another signal is narrative control. In functional relating, you are often placed in a fixed role. The listener, the stabilizer, the one who understands, the one who can handle it. And there's little room for you to change shape without the relationship becoming strained because the bond depends on you remaining legible in that role only. And what makes this hard to accept is that functional relating can still feel very warm and cozy. It can still include care, affection, shared humor, and real moments of connection. Now, the difference is not the presence of closeness. The difference is whether closeness survives once your role is no longer needed. Okay? Now, this is the moment people feel disoriented because the memory of connection clashes with the present absence of engagement. The mind looks for conflict, betrayal, or misunderstanding when the truth is structural. The relationship was organized around contribution, not companionship. The question that clarifies everything in real time is this. If you stop offering what you usually offer, does the relationship reorganize to include you, or does it slowly start to dissolve? And that answer alone will tell you whether you are being related to relationally or functionally. And seeing that doesn't require you to stop loving. It just requires you to stop mistaking access for intimacy. I want to touch on the year of the wood snake again, because I'm going to keep reminding everyone that we are still in the year of the wood snake, and that does not end until February 17th. And so I want to touch on that. And I also want to touch on the number 69 again, because with the year of the wood snake and just shedding everything that needs to be shed, and it just feels so heavy right now, especially now because, again, we're still in the wood snake year, and we're also in the deep winter passage. And so it is like a double whammy. So the six represents the life you maintained throughout the year and the roles that you held and the responsibilities that you carried, the emotional labor you absorbed, and the systems you kept running because your presence made their fragility invisible. And the nine, I want you to remember this because this is so powerful. The nine represents the wisdom that arrives when that cycle completes. And it's not anger, it's not collapse, it's not revenge. It's just a moment where you know that this version of life has finished teaching you what it can teach, and that continuing would require you to disappear in ways you just can't justify anymore. So the year of the wood snake does not initiate shedding at the beginning. It initiates shedding when staying the same, it just costs too much. And that is why this moment mattered the way it did, because nothing collapsed. I mean, maybe my heart, it felt sad, but nothing exploded. I didn't say anything in anger. Nothing had to be destroyed for the truth to arrive. 69 cents, for me, it was not devastation. It was a clear moment, an epiphany. It was the exact moment where the pattern revealed itself fully. This is what deep integration looks like in the year of the wood snake. It's not loud and it's not dramatic. It's final because it's understood. So a shed that happens this way, it doesn't repeat itself because the skin is torn away. It is just released. And what comes next is not rebuilding the same life with better language or stronger limits. What comes next is inhabiting a different structure entirely. So that is the shed. That is the close of the cycle. And we are in deep with it. Even though it's almost over, we are in deep with it. But we are going to prevail. We always do. We're the winning team. Remember this. So I want to ask you something, and I want you to take your time with it. You don't have to have answers right away, or you actually might have them right away, but don't feel any pressure. What has been your 69-cent moment this year? Where did you realize that you were giving more than you could continue to carry? And what moment showed you clearly and without any argument or negotiating that you had outgrown a version of yourself that you kept maintaining out of habit or responsibility? What skin are you still wearing that no longer protects you, that restricts your movement, that asks you to remain smaller or more available than you actually are? And I want you to give yourself some time to answer this. And you don't need to answer out loud. You don't need to explain it to anyone, but you do need to answer it honestly. Because that's what we're about over here. That's what we have going on in the House of Divine Therapy and All Things Divine podcast. We must be transparent, because these moments don't arrive to shame you or to rush you. They arrive to expand you. If any of the questions stirred something in you, let that be enough for now, because awareness is not a demand. Awareness is an opening, and the year of the wood snake doesn't ask for dramatic endings, thank goodness, because I can be dramatic at times, but I don't need anything dramatic. But what the year of the wood snake does ask for is truthful endings. So I want to leave you with this reframing, because moments like these are easy to misinterpret when we don't have the full language for what has actually happened. 69 cents, again, was not a failure. It was a threshold for me. It was a moment where unconscious sacrifice ended, where giving stopped being automatic, and where a pattern I had been suffering inside of finally became visible enough to lose its hold. And that's what I want 69 cents to be for you as well. This is the moment before the shed. So again, this is not a collapse, even though it may hurt. And this is not the aftermath of anything. This is a pause where you realize something has completed itself internally, even if nothing has changed on the outside yet. This is the moment where you know too much to continue the same way. You're not going to be able to go back. I make it difficult for you to go back. This is the moment where you feel the internal recognition settle in, where the truth arrives without drama, and it just can't be undone once it's seen. What changes here is not your life overnight. What changes is authority. The pattern no longer gets to decide for you. The role of number six no longer gets to define you. And the structure of transactional attachment no longer gets to survive at your expense. This is not a loss, guys. This is a completion. So endings like this, they don't announce themselves loud. They don't come with fireworks or clean conclusions. They come with clarity. They come with the quiet knowing that something you once tolerated no longer fits, and that continuing would require you to disappear in ways that you're no longer willing to justify. 69 cents was not what I had left in the whole world. It was what I had at that moment, but it just showed me what I was finished giving. So in a sense, I guess poetically, the 69 cents that I only had to my name at the time, I actually was rich because I learned something really deep. So I appreciate you taking the time with me. I know this episode was a little long, but I love talking to you, friends. And if this episode named something for you, stayed with you, or helped you recognize a moment you have been circling without words, you can find me at divinetherapy.com. You can also share this episode. And of course, at divinetherapy.com, that's where the work continues through writing, offerings, and spaces designed for real integration. You can also find me on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube at Divine Therapy, where I share reflections and conversations and moments from inside the work as it unfolds. So thank you for being here. Thank you for trusting the process. And thank you again, friends, for taking a seat at my table.